Hats off to you for taking that first step. But before you settle into the fantastic feeling, don't forget, you still need to send in that pledge of support to finalize a promise to KPFT. But be warned, that fantastic feeling will soon follow. Thanks for supporting KPFT Houston.
This is Linnell Anderson, chair of the Texas Bucket Brigade, a nonprofit volunteer environmental organization working with the citizens of Houston neighborhoods, training them to take samples of the air we breathe. The samples are analyzed so we know exactly what chemicals are in the air. If you're interested in learning more about environmental issues in Houston, sampling the air in your community, or if you are interested in health impacts of exposure to toxic chemicals, we want to hear from you. You're invited to participate in a survey that we're conducting. We want to know how Houston air pollution is affecting you and your family. Give us a call today at 281-360-3333 or contact us at survey@texasbucketbrigade.org. We need your input. This is listener-sponsored Radio Pacifica, KPFT Houston.
FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. It's 47 degrees in Houston, and this is our last show for 2003. We will be doing a number of things, including in the first hour, JD is going to be doing part of Audiophile.
Yes, this week, the Audiophile gang takes over This Way Out. We're giving a whole half-hour review of the best CDs of the year from all the Audiophile features we've done, and it should be pretty good.
And in the second hour, we're going to be doing not only the best of 2003, but some of the best we've done in the past couple years. Of course, one of the highlights is the sodomy law being overturned by the Supreme Court, which came out of a case here in Harris County. You are, of course, listening to Queer Voices here on KPFT in Houston. But first, we go to the news in London from the BBC World News Service. It is 8:01 p.m.
BBC News with John Jason. The six countries of the Gulf Cooperation Council have agreed to send $400 million to help with reconstruction after the massive earthquake in Iran. The decision, taken at an emergency meeting in the Saudi capital Riyadh, followed an urgent call from the United Nations for more money to help cope with the aftermath of the disaster. Imogen Folks reports.
Although over $500,000 in aid has already come directly from the emergency funds of UN organizations, it's nowhere near enough. 25,000 victims of Iran's earthquake have already been buried, but it's estimated over 10,000 are injured and 100,000 are homeless. A UN spokesman in Geneva said the greatest fear of relief workers was that, once the earthquake disappeared from television screens, donors would forget Iran's tragedy. Now that such a substantial figure has been pledged by the Gulf states, aid organizations may feel more confident that the long-term but vital task of reconstruction in Iran can really begin.
American officials have taken the power to order all airlines flying to the United States to carry armed guards. Announcing the measure, the U.S. Secretary for Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, said flights could be banned if airlines refused to comply. From Washington, here's our correspondent, John Lyne.
Mr. Ridge said the United States would now order sky marshals to be deployed on any foreign plane in U.S. airspace if intelligence suggested evidence of a threat. Mr. Ridge said the United States reserved the right to revoke access to American airspace if foreign airlines or governments refused to comply. But he praised the spirit of cooperation he said he'd received from the British and French governments. Mr. Ridge said today's announcement had not been provoked by any specific threat. But at the same time, he also spoke of intelligence which had led to the cancellation of Air France flights to Los Angeles last week.
A bomb has exploded in a vehicle belonging to a senior officer in the Saudi security forces. The authorities say the blast happened shortly after the officer parked the vehicle outside his home in a residential area of the capital Riyadh. Witnesses said a device was thrown at the car. No one was hurt in the incident, which comes at a time when the Saudi authorities are conducting a campaign against Islamic militants. You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. Public prosecutors in Portugal have charged 10 people, including a former government minister and two television presenters, in connection with the sexual abuse of children in the care of a state-run network of homes. The accused include the employment minister in the last socialist government, Paulo Pedroso, and the former ambassador to South Africa, Jorge Ritu. Police have spent more than a year investigating allegations that children from the Casa Pia homes in the capital Lisbon were abused by a paedophile ring. The founder of the bankrupt food giant Parmalat, Calista Tanzi, has admitted to magistrates in Milan that he misappropriated hundreds of millions of dollars from the company. The Italian Dairy and Foods Group, which employs about 35,000 people worldwide, filed for bankruptcy last week after the discovery of an initial shortfall of $4.8 billion in its accounts. Francis Kennedy reports from Rome.
From initial declarations that he'd only taken a negligible sum for personal use, Calisto Tanzi has now reportedly admitted misappropriating $600 million over a period of 8 years. Mr. Tanzi's lawyer, Fabio Belloni, said his client confessed the siphoning off of funds from the food giant Parmalat during a long interrogation by magistrates in Milan on Monday. Mr. Tanzi is under investigation for false accounting and fraud that provokes bankruptcy, as well as manipulating the financial markets and making false statements to auditors.
The United Nations nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, has praised Libya's cooperation with teams inspecting the country's programs for developing weapons of mass destruction. The IAEA chief, Mohamed El-Baradei, said after meeting the Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, in Tripoli, that snap inspections of the country's nuclear facilities could begin immediately, and that they'd already been shown equipment that could have been used in the process of enriching uranium. The IAEA head added that Mr. Gaddafi had told him the country was now looking at a new chapter in its relations with the West. Thousands of indigenous Indians have invaded farms in Brazil, close to the border with Paraguay, in an attempt to reclaim ancestral land. Police in Brazil said the Indians from the Guarani and Kiowas tribes appeared with painted faces and armed with traditional weapons as they forced the occupants of the ranches to flee. The build-up to the invasion started a week ago in the Mato Grosso do Sul region of Brazil. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Walensky.
And Janine Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
Well, we're Joanless tonight. Joan called in sick. Probably one of her trips that she went to somewhere.
I think there's a Bewitched marathon and she's staying for that.
Something like that, yes. We don't really pay attention to her when she's talking about that
stuff. No, we don't.
Anyway, this is the last show of the year, and I'm sure you're hearing that from a lot of other shows here on this station and other stations. But in the second hour, Glenn's going to be doing sort of the best of compilation of the stuff that we've done in the past, mostly on local stuff, but a lot of times local stuff does reflect the national stuff that's going on. And also, JD is going to be doing, we'll hear soon, him and who's your partner in crime?
My co-producers in L.A. are Chris Wilson and Christopher David Trentum, and we do Audiophile. That'll be a recap of the best CDs of the year.
And exactly what is Audiophile?
Audiophile is a monthly CD review segment carried on This Way Out, usually the last week of the month. We do three artists, three CDs, and a quote by the artist, and we try and fit it into about 6 or 7 minutes, which is pretty hard to do.
If you'd like to know what's on the show, and usually we know what's on the show, but not always, you can go to our website, queervoices.org, and if you'd like to maybe schedule a topic or give us some suggestions, there's a place there where you can email us and let us know and give us some ideas, because basically our show is done for and about the community. And, we don't always know everything that's going on in the community. We try to keep in tune to things, but certainly we're open, and part of the reason for this show is to give organizations some publicity so that they can talk about what they're doing, and we do try to base it that way. Let's listen to Audiophile.
Leave the seat up late at night.
Say a prayer for me, Sarah.
I like a man who is crazy about me.
Danger's my favorite thing.
I'll cross into your heart, you'll cross in mine.
I listen to the wind, to the wind.
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike.
This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. This week, the Audiophile 2003 Year in Review. This Way Out's award-winning team of Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle, with their able but unheard technical guru, Christopher David Trentum, recall the rainbow of styles and sounds produced by queer musicians in the past 12 months. NewsRep will return in the new year to bring you more of the news in or affecting the gay and lesbian community. And now, crank up the volume and ring out the old year with our Audiophile 2003 Year in Review.
This is my story and I'm sticking to it, no matter what people say. So listen, mommy, and listen, daddy. Your little boy, well, he's not straight. And I don't know where this came from. All I know is I'm feeling good about myself. So don't think that you failed me or believe that I need help. Just because I wanna double my wardrobe, leave the seat up late at night, sing Madonna with an attitude. Oh, if I want to dance at the tea dance and cry over broken romance and smile at the queens down on the avenue. This is what I wanted. This is what is true.
Welcome to our special 2003 Year in Review expanded edition of Audiophile. Hi, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. In the past year, out gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered artists brought us a wonderful variety of music. This week, we look back and share with you our favorites from our 2003 Audiophile features.
And the first of those is Stephen Franz. In his debut album, The One You Choose, he brings us not only tongue-in-cheek humor with a song about doubling his wardrobe, but also music that is as enjoyable as it is reflective.
Information about Stephen Franz and his CD, The One You Choose, check out his website at www.stephenfranz.com. That's www.stephenfranz.com.
This year, Rachel Sage brought us her fifth album called Public Record, and she draws from many musical traditions to present her unique perspectives.
Too many men in this big black room.
Gonzalez said that her goal with this album was to rely on spirit and poetry and let the musical style go where the lyrics took her. And she's done it beautifully.
Find out more about Rachel Sage and her album, Public Record, at www.rachelsage.com. That's www.rachelsage.com.
Mark Weigel makes his fourth appearance on our year in review show with his fourth album, and it's somewhat of a departure for him.
Mark's new CD is different and the same. But instead of singing his own songs, this is an album of cover versions.
Disturbed. Jimmy, I got
out more about Different and the Same, the new album by Mark Weigel, at www.markweigel.com. That's www.markweigel.com.
In the hush of dawn, someone I adore waits for me. Waiting to be, wanting for we. Sweet, sweet.
Smoky jazz sound comes from the album Ginger Comes to Stay by Mary Lofstrom. But sadly, this wonderful talent was taken from us this past October when she lost her battle with ovarian cancer and scleroderma, a rare autoimmune disorder.
She released her first album, the equally wonderful and equally out, My Secret Joy, in 1996. This year, she was honored at the Out Music Awards in June with the Outstanding Female Recording of the Year Award for Ginger Comes to Stay. Both of her albums showcase her versatility.
I've never seen the inside of a barroom to a jukebox all night long, but I see these are the things that bring you pleasure, so I'm gonna make some changes in our home. I heard it said that if you can't beat 'em, join 'em. So if that's the way you wanted me to be, I'll change if it takes that to make you happy. From now on, you're gonna see a different me. Because your good girl is gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swinginest swinger that you've ever had. If you like them painted up, powdered up, then you ought to be glad. Because your good girly girl is gonna go bad. I'll even learn to like the taste of whiskey. In fact, you'll hardly recognize your wife. I'll buy some brand new clothes. I'll dress up fancy for my journey to the wilder side of life. Because your good girl is gonna go bad. I'm gonna be the swinginest swinger that you've ever had. If you like them painted up,
information about the recordings of Mary Lofstrom can be found at www.shimmeringfish.com. You're listening to the Audiophile 2003 Year in Review here on This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm J.D. Doyle. Nomalee Brennett describes himself as gender variant, and that definitely affects the lyrics of his debut album, Boy in a Dress.
Father, sister, brother, turn.
Rennet draws on folk, electronic, and jazz influences and explores issues ranging from gender ambiguity to the pain of isolation to the joys of liberation.
You can learn more about Nomaly Brennett's CD, Void Address, at www.nomalybrennett.com. That's www.nomalybrennett.com.
Friedman is a modern piano man, and his albums combine soul-searching songwriting, strong vocals, and masterful piano skills that touch an emotional chord. 2003 saw the release of his third full-length album called Some Company.
I've swam upon the devil's lake, yeah, but never, 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 never. I'll never make the same mistake. No, never, never, never.
And Scott's been quite busy this year. In addition to releasing the new CD, he has also produced a benefit compilation album called By the People, featuring major and independent label artists, for the purpose of promoting understanding of bisexuality.
What would you say if you found out today? Will it be your last? Would you try to bargain with God? Take a chance, grab hold of the hands, family and friends, tell them all just what they meant. Do you know what to say? Do you know what to do? When they stared at you, wide-eyed and laughing and saying, hey, are you crazy, man? I don't have time for this. Come on, I'm gonna miss my favorite show. Well, now I'm heading south. Gonna let shut my mouth and listen to the people and their places and their stories before I turn to judge. Then I will see the crutch. I've been leaning on far too long. Gotta learn to stand on my own.
Find out more about Scott Friedman and his CD, Some Company, at www.scottfriedman.com. That's www.scottfriedman.com. Wrapping up our musical look back at 2003 is our show's third debut album. And it's, well, completely unique, irreverent, funny, in-your-face, and downright entertaining. It's called Boy Howdy, and is by Jay Spears.
I always wanted to be top dog. Yes.
to prove to you what my heart can do.
It includes lyrics that are catchy and often over the top, dealing openly with being a gay man, and sometimes touching subjects that you're not used to hearing in a song.
Met a big smiley jarhead, and there wasn't much doubt. He's sizing me up, I'm checking him out. Made a date for the weekend, and I was delighted. Couldn't wait, couldn't sleep, I was too excited. So we went to the beach, and I'm thinking, doggone, we're hitting it off, it's turning me on. Then he looks me in the eye, honest as the sky, and he says, I'm an HIV positive guy. And I go,
about Jay Spears and his album Boy Howdy at www.jayspears.com.
We saved the catchiest song of the show for last. What song would want to follow Jay Spears' I Like Mike?
I like Mike, what's up to like?
We like Mike, what's up to like? He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while.
I like Mike. Hardball, that's my Mike.
He's always playing hardball.
That's my Mike. Got the leather, got the lumber. He's a true all-star. A permanent pirate in his muscle car. He's always playing hardball. That's my Mike.
He's always playing hardball.
That's my Mike. I like Mike. What's not to like?
We like Mike. What's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while. I like Mike.
And that's it for this special year-in-review edition of Audiophile. We would like to thank our co-producer, Christopher David Trenton, for helping to make Audiophile possible.
You can write to us at Post Office Box 66648, Houston, Texas, 77006, or by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiofile.org.
Audiophile is produced by Chris Wilson, G. Doyle, and Christopher David Trenton. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
He doesn't chew, because it's what I asked him not to do.
He asked me to dance, but I sat it out. Mike got the hint, and he spat it out. He doesn't chew, because I asked him not to.
Mike doesn't chew, because it's what you asked him not to do.
I like Mike, what's not to like?
We like Mike, what's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pipe in a good long while. Not to like.
Permanent pirate.
That's my Mike.
Muscle car all-star.
What's not to like?
Sad ass, bad ass.
I like Mike.
Ball player boyfriend.
What's not to like?
Boy player ball friend.
That's my Mike.
Ball player boyfriend.
What's not to like?
He's the best darn thing to come down the pike in a good long while.
I like Mike.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You're listening to 9.1 FM KPFT.
Well, since the next hour is going to be the best of, or the, you know, highlights of the past, not just this year, but some other stories going previous years. Next week, David Elliott will be on, and David Elliott sort of gives us a national perspective, and we're getting pretty close for the first elections, the primaries or caucuses of the for presidential year.
When is that, like February? Or?
It's in January. Really? I think... Vermont, New Hampshire is in early February, but Vermont is, or Iowa is actually in January. And
I'm sure David will have some interesting things to say about
that. Yeah, and of course the whole issue of gay marriage is probably going to play prominently in these in this election, because it's so controversial for the right wing.
Dean being from Vermont.
Yes, exactly. And being the front runner in the Democratic primary. And, you know, they're even talking about introducing an amendment to the Constitution to prohibit prohibit gay marriage.
They're going to sure try.
Exactly. It seems really, really bizarre. So I'm sure that's going to be a big issue next year, especially after winning the 2106 case here in the Supreme Court, which was brought from Harris County, which was pretty interesting, which happened 2 days before the parade this year, mm-hmm. which gave us an incredible celebration.
Hey, Jack, do you happen to know if they pass around an amendment to the different states and it gets approved by two-thirds or four-fifths or whatever it is and is enacted, is that still subject to review by the Supreme Court? Could somebody challenge it?
I don't think it is.
I don't believe so. And it depends on how it's written. Constitutional amendments are above the Supreme Court from
what I
understand.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and it really depends on how it's written. It's going to be a long battle to get it done, but it may go pretty quickly in some of those things, but it's going to take a while to do it. And, you know, this whole argument about gay marriage being a threat to traditional marriage, well, the biggest threat through traditional marriage is divorce.
That's right. That's right, exactly.
But they're ready to spend millions to defend that form.
Well, that's a lot of times, you know, if anybody saw that movie Canadian Bacon, how they try to deflect the problems, and maybe that's being done now in certain instances. The real problems we're not dealing with, so let's make up some other ones. You have a song, J.D.?
Yes, I have a song I brought special for tonight. It's almost newsworthy in itself that it exists. It's by Michael Feinstein, who's a pretty well-known cabaret artist. He came out about 10 years ago in The Advocate, but he hasn't really been very visible gay-wise. Well, he's finally recorded a song that is lyrically gay, and it's sort of a has some anthem-like aspects to it, and he did it as a CD single to benefit Broadway Cares, which is a AIDS charity organization. So this is brand new. We're probably the first, one of the first stations to even play it.
Who are these strangers we know have been here since the dawn of this old human race? Are these strangers whom we fill with fear and we treat as a social disgrace? They're our sisters and brothers and parents, and yes, they're our daughters and sons, and what's more, they're among us at school and at work, and I guess very frequently right next door. Who are these strangers denied self-esteem? All they ask is to live here in peace. Most of these strangers share our every dream, and they may be your nephew or niece. If a man loves a man, or a girl loves a girl, should we listen when told we must hate them? If they've truly been evil since ages primeval, why then does our God still create them? Who gave all that art? Michelangelo soon comes to mind. Name some composers who wrote from the heart, and Tchaikovsky's the first of his kind. While they hid their identity, they gave their all with an unknowing world in their death. Every museum and symphony hall, were there really thanked? Not as yet. Who are these strangers in our world of pop? There's Cole Porter and Coward as well. Where would the theater be? Start from the top. Does the name Oscar Wilde ring a bell?
Jerry Robbins, Nureyev, Nijinsky for dance, Marcel Proust, Herman Melville, the novel. After all, they're enriching the world of romance. Many people would still have them grovel. Ooh, I ask you, are these strangers? Who are these strangers who came to define all the culture the 20s would see? Betoclus and friend Gertrude Stein had the salon that ruled Gay Paris. Back when Emily Dickinson silently stood as the empress of poem and prose, never dreaming an Ellen DeGeneres would let the world know more just suppose. Strangers that brought us so far, all these heroines out of the past, and in spite of bigotry followed their star and persisted though hissed and stuck fast. Yes, these women are different, but not bizarre, and we're learning from their rare acumen that it's natural for them to be as they are, and they'll teach us yet how to be human. Ooh, I ask you, are these strangers?
Strangers, Michael Feinstein. This is Queer Voices.
Some of America's most interesting writers are among the contributors to A Woman Like That. Lesbian and bisexual writers tell their coming out stories. The collection reminded This Way Out's Janet Mason that coming out is never an ordinary story.
Think of that conversational click with friends the first time they tell you their coming out stories and you realize you have never known them better. As the poet Muriel Rukeyser wrote, what would happen if one woman told the truth about her life? The world would split open. Joan Larkin fittingly quotes Rukeyser in the introduction to A Woman Like That, Lesbian and Bisexual Writers Tell Their Coming Out Stories. This new volume of coming out stories, featuring a stellar cast of seasoned writers, has recently been reissued in paperback and stands as a testament to the coming out story. For years now, the coming out story has been thought of as passé. The fact is that it has been done and overdone. It has been done in print, it has been done in therapy groups, and it has even been done on national television. What could possibly be left to say? As it turns out, plenty. I am familiar with many of the writers in this collection. I have met them at writing conferences, and my work has appeared side by side with theirs in other anthologies. I expected to love this book, but I did not expect to experience such raw intimacy on the reading of these intensely personal essays. I admit to having my favorites, and so instead of launching in from page one, I start midway with the work of Blanche McCrary Boyd, a novelist whose latest tour de force is Terminal Velocity, published by Knopf. Blanche is now settled down in a split level, co-parenting twins with her partner. But in the pages of my heart, she'll always be one hot number. She begins her essay, My Debut, by writing, I grew up in Charlestown, South Carolina, where coming out meant wearing a long white gown and wrist corsage, so I've never been able to think about coming out as a lesbian without snickering. My debut occurred in 1970 at the end of a radical feminist occupation of a building at Harvard. It is fitting that Joan Larkin, the editor of this collection, who is also a poet, placed Bertha Harris's essay first, followed by Judy Gronn and Jill Johnston. Bertha Harris is the least well-known of these three important pioneering lesbian authors. Her novels were first published by Daughters Press in the late 60s and early 70s. It is often said that Harris was the artist of Daughters Press, while Rita Mae Brown was the star. Harris's piece, titled This Song is Dedicated to the One I Love, which deserves to be read in its entirety and not summarized, is edgy and gripping, the most powerful in this collection. All of the pieces in this collection honor the ongoing emotional complexity of being lesbian or bisexual. Many of the women who came out early on, Jill Johnston, the author of Lesbian Nation, for example, tell painful stories of living double lives and of the necessity of having to come out over and over again. Some of the pieces, such as the one written by Judy Gronn, focus on a sexual identity found in childhood and early adolescence. Others, such as the pieces by Minnie Bruce Pratt and Mariana Roma Carmona, focus on the loss of their sons in a custody battles and the ongoing complexity of relating to their now adult children. Many of them analyze the complexity of gender and, as in the piece written by Pat Califia, transgender. More than a few of these essays remind us that love and sex do not always go hand in hand. Writing about an early non-sexual attachment, Joan Nessel remembers adolescent passion much later in life when she is dealing with the ravages of cancer on a daily basis. Sheila appears to me again. Again, I see those white bands of desire, so fresh, so perfumed with the body's perfection. My icon of want, crush, they call it. Those who have no idea of the mystery of our desire and how, like a god, it stays with us through all the years. How is remembered perfection, no matter how false, keeps kindness alive. A Woman Like That is the kind of book that I couldn't put down at the same time I was always putting it down, as I stared into thin air, remembering my own early experiences. The stories in this collection are so varied that they raise the collective question of what is coming out, really. Is it an individual experience with one other woman or several? Is it a connection with a community or an announcement you make to the world? It is all of these things, of course. The term coming out is best defined, perhaps, by Joan Larkin in the introduction as first desire. With commentary on A Woman Like That, lesbian and bisexual writers tell their coming out stories from Avon Books. And with thanks to Deborah D'Alessandra for production assistance, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
They call us dykes. They do. They call us dykes. They call us dykes. Everybody now, here we go. Here dykes, there dykes, everywhere dykes. E-I-E-I-O. They call us dykes. They call us dykes. I don't know what they're calling us anymore, but we're dykes.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, as we wrap up this year, and of course, Glenn will be doing the best of this year in the next hour, some of the stories that we did locally. We want to thank everybody for all the support they gave to us and to this radio station. And if you've made a pledge and you haven't fulfilled it, please do so. And do so ideally by the end of the year, and it would make everything much better around here. As you know, we're all volunteers here on the show, and basically when we ask for money, we ask to help support the station and the infrastructure that is needed to keep the station going. And we certainly appreciate it, and so do all the other programs here and all the other volunteers at the station. And of course, coming up in early next year will actually be the elections for the new board of directors, the local board, they call it advisory board, which then, of course, will elect the national board. And as you know, KPFT is this real experiment that has been working so far for about 30 years, and Pacifica a little bit over 50 years. And, you know, there's always struggles and battles here, but somehow we seem to manage and keep on going.
We're the alternative to Clear Channel.
Well, just about everything else an alternative to Clear Channel. Pacifica owns stations and Clear Channel owns 1,200 stations. Yet, I think we do some of the most unique programming that's done anywhere because we do programming that means stuff and not just what is on the charts.
And where are you going to get gay programming except on a station like this?
Exactly. So, we have another song to play?
We have a song called Is It Over Yet by Mark and Dean.
Thank you. past has gone away. Is it finished now? Can we all return today? Is it good for now? Are people still passing away? Can I relax a bit? Or must we further the cause? Is it over and done? When will it? So many memories left here with us. Too many separated from their family. I thought by now this would be over, all this pain and tragedy. But this plague has gotten away with murder, and we're all victims in its way. Is it over yet? Has the crisis gone away? Is it finished now? Secured for now, are people still passing away? Can I relax a bit? Or must we further the cause? Is it over and done? When will AIDS finally leave us alone? To attend, trying to alert awareness and consciousness. Our wallets are all wearing thin. I thought the time would have come by now, thousands would have been saved. But we still have got to shield ourselves, fighting ignorance with what we know is true. Is it over yet? Has the crisis gone away? Is it finished now? Can we all return to play? Is it cured for now? Are people still passing away? Can I relax a bit? Or must we further the cause? Is it over and done? When will AIDS finally leave us alone? Yes, I'm sorry to report that the battle is not done, but I'll fight with each breath till our victory is won. Is it over yet? Has the crisis gone?
FM. This is KPFT in Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valensky, Joan Devlin, and Glenn Holt. Good evening, I'm Glenn Holt, and this is The Best of Queer Voices. I combed through the audio archives of the last 3 years of Queer Voices, and I have chosen 6 items that are timeless and interesting. There is, of course, lots of other material that fits that description as well, but I had to make a choice. So, in this hour, I have J.D. Doyle discussing the award that he won from OutMusic.com, an article from This Way Out on the Stonewall Riots as the beginning of gay pride in America, an interview that Joan Devlin did about forming gay-straight alliances in schools, a condensed version of some of the speeches from the Victory Rally following this year's Supreme Court decision striking down sodomy laws, and a couple of humorous pieces, an outtake of Bing Crosby screwing up a recording of Jingle Bells, and a comedy sketch by lesbian comedian Jane Ward. It's The Best of Queer Voices. This is Queer Voices. J.D. Doyle is a member of the Queer Voices team here in Houston, and every month he produces Queer Music Heritage from his large personal archives of gay music. He contributes regularly to Audiophile, produced as part of This Way Out from KPFA in Los Angeles and syndicated around the country. And J.D. has his own website dedicated to gay music. In 2002, J.D. received an award for all of his hard work from OutMusic.com.
Can you tell us about it?
Okay, first let's say what OutMusic is. OutMusic is an organization based out of New York, but now it has members all over the country and even Canada and so forth. It's a network of musicians, songwriters, media people, producers, writers, etc., non-musicians, and just plain fans who want to encourage and support queer music.
Which would explain why you got nominated. So tell us.
It's one of the reasons. Joan's talking about the category for outstanding support, which is for people who support queer music. And I think I was probably nominated for several reasons. One of them was the Queer Music Heritage Show, because it's promoting the music old and new. Another one is Audiophile. Audiophile on This Way Out, I'm fortunate enough to be a co-producer of that. And on that, we spotlight 3 new CDs every month. So artists love that.
And it also may be because J.D. Doyle is the most renowned person in queer music in the world.
That could be.
And that's Jimmy Carper, who is totally unbiased.
That's right. Jimmy is totally unbiased.
No, it's true, unbiased. It's true, though.
Yes. J.D., tell us a little bit about what it was like. How'd you find out you got nominated? I know you flew to New York. Did you expect to win? Were you shocked?
The nominations were about a month or so ago, so that wasn't really a surprise. The competition was pretty good. One of them, Danny Jenkins, started the OutVoice website, which is a wonderful site for promoting queer music, www.outvoice.net. Wonderful source. The other person, Robert Drake, is the host of Q-Zine in Philadelphia, and he's been doing this for a number of years and has had a media magazine that he's been doing, and just, you know, one of his shows was on satellite, you know, promoting queer music. Just good guys. They're both friends of mine.
So when they said your name, I mean, was it like the Oscars? Did you just kind of go, ah?
Well, I kind of went, I know you couldn't see that. Surprised me is the applause kind of took me back. I got up to the microphone and they were still at it, and I just kind of had to take a step back. I was kind of stunned.
Now, tell us, you didn't bring your little award in for us to see.
I don't have it yet.
Oh, you don't have it yet.
I have to engrave it.
Okay, describe it for us.
It's a clear, I guess it's made of plastic, plaque with a circular design in the center, similar to a CD, and it has the OutMusic logo on it, and they'll inscribe it some way.
Well, J.D., we're so proud of you. You deserve it.
Absolutely. And now we can even say we're an award-winning show, not because of us, but because of J.D.
We can talk about, you know, J.D.'s award-winning, our award-winning monthly program,
and
Music Heritage.
That'll be next week.
That's right.
I need to get the OutMusic website, www.outmusic.com. There are a lot of people that won very deserving awards in a lot of categories, from jazz to, you know, chorus, male and female, debut male and female. For those people who think queer music is just Holly Near and Chris Williamson and disco or dance club music, it's not. Go to the website, click on some of the winners' links, and hear their songs. You'll be surprised.
And what's your website?
Mine is www.queermusicheritage.com.
You are listening to the best of Queer Voices.
Around the Christmas holidays each year, we here at Queer Voices like to play some personal favorites, which sometimes are not so reverent takeoffs of traditional Christmas carols. Joan Devlin brought us this next item on Christmas Eve 2001. In the early days of commercial sound recording, before the advent of tape recorders, everything was cut direct to disc, literally. The original recordings for those old 78 RPM pressings were cut into a metallic master disc by a special machine. Once the cutting process started, there was really no point in stopping it. You can go back and record over a mistake, and each 78 RPM record was only a few minutes long anyway. So it was that sometime in the 1940s, Bing Crosby was cutting a recording of Jingle Bells. Bing made a mistake near the end of the song. The backup band was a pre-recorded playback, so the session just kept on going without affecting the band. Listen to what Bing Crosby does.
Yeah.
It is riding a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on Bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
A little more serious. In June of this year, we were all waiting anxiously for a ruling from the Supreme Court of the United States on the constitutionality of the Texas sodomy law known as Section 2106 of the Texas Criminal Code. We wanted a ruling in time to celebrate the anticipated victory at the Gay Pride Parade, which was coming up at the end of June. Finally, on Thursday, June 26th, the decision was handed down. This landmark case was just what we hoped for, what so many people had worked so hard on, and it all started right here in Houston. Here are some highlights from the 2106 victory rally held that day at City Hall.
Good afternoon to you all. Thanks so much for being here. I'm Clarence Burton Bagby. I'm president of the Houston GLBT Community Center. and we're really pleased to host this Lambda Legal Defense and Education Fund press conference. Obviously, the purpose of this briefing is to discuss the impact of the Supreme Court's ruling on Lambda Legal's case challenging the Texas sodomy law. The case started here in Houston, as many of us remember, 5 years ago. Five and a half years ago? When the police, answering a false police report, found that John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner having private consensual sex in John's apartment. They were arrested, fined, and spent a night in jail.
What happened is the Supreme Court, it was a 5-3 ruling. Now, it's a 5-3 ruling on the privacy. So when Justice Kennedy is writing today, and he is saying that there is an inherent right of privacy when people are in their own home, he is saying that he is understanding how the law in the state of Texas, how it was hurtful, harmful to people beyond what you would imagine just in terms of sexual conduct, but how it was harmful to people in terms of custody, employment, and a variety of other ways. So that's what that's an important piece of the ruling. Justice Kennedy noticed? He noticed that the court got it wrong in Bowers because he said they got it wrong because they didn't really understand the history correctly. He said they got it wrong in Bowers insofar as they were trying to, what they were trying to do was capture historical arguments. He said that they got the history wrong. He said that because they got it wrong, it was the responsibility of the court today to get it right. And Lambda Legal agrees that today the court, the United States Supreme Court, got it right. And we're celebrating that. Justice O'Connor's opinion is a concurring opinion. In Justice O'Connor's opinion, what Justice O'Connor was doing was she spoke about equal protection. What equal protection is, of course, as you all know, equal protection insists that the laws of this, of the United States Constitution, the laws of the various states, be applied equally unless there's some compelling reason why they would not be applied that way. Justice O'Connor said she would not, in fact, go along with the majority on overruling the Bowers versus Hardwick decision. She noted at the outset that she was a part of the majority in that opinion, and she would continue herself in along the majority in that opinion. So that's an important thing to notice. It's also important to notice what the dissents say. I think Justice Thomas's dissent, and I want to quote it because it's incredible what he says. What he says is, I join Justice Scalia's dissent. I write separately to note that the law before the court today is uncommonly silly. If I were a member of the Texas legislature, I would vote to repeal it. Punishing someone for expressing his sexual preference through non-commercial consensual conduct with another adult does not appear to be a worthy way to expend valuable law enforcement resources. So, but Justice Thomas nevertheless joined with Justice Scalia in the dissent. And he joined Justice Scalia in the dissent because he felt that Hardwick should be followed, and he went along with the idea of stare decisis. So that's what I wanted to mainly sort of do, is capture what the opinion is. We are overjoyed with this opinion. It's an incredibly liberating opinion. So many people thought that the court wouldn't step up to the plate. It takes incredible courage for a court to say, we got it wrong, and to say, we got it wrong then, and we got it wrong now, and we're going to fix it, and that's what they did.
And I want to echo one thing that Garnett said, and that is in the beginning in 1998, there were people in Houston who said, don't do this. We have a conservative Supreme Court. You're going to make the situation worse. They said that. And we said, we don't think so. We think that this is the time and that this law is so unconstitutional. And our clients were willing to take that chance because if they lost, that was their criminal record. That we said, we are going to do it. Lambda said, we can go forward. And so together we decided we will take that chance. And I encourage all of you that are scared because you're afraid that something's going to happen if you speak out or if you be who you are, is to use this opportunity as the motivation to be yourself and to fight for what is right. And a person who's been fighting for what is right for 20 some odd years or even more than that is the Houston activist Ray Hill.
Well, children, it's been a long hunt.
The last time we had this many people this close to City Hall, we ran Anita Bryant out of town in 1977. We've been coming to this spot since some of us were teenagers, ain't that right, Ford? I mean, a lot of us just naturally grew up here because we were already on the outside. We were already unwanted. We were already disadvantaged. We were already neglected. We noticed that the black people got somewhere where they got by struggling uphill for some level of equality. And we said, why not queers? Why not queers? What's so different about us? And then we looked around and we found out who was active in the civil rights movement. Well, she was queer and he was queer and they were queer. And then we got to the anti-war movement. And all of a sudden we noticed, who are the organizers here? I'm queer and she's queer. And we were doing all of this work for other people's freedom. So why not apply it to ourselves? And then we noticed that a lot of overachieving, very bureaucratic type gay people were struggling through law school and doing very well, thank you. And so a bunch of us got together and we said, oh no, it's too much responsibility for me. But we found Pat Wiseman and we cobbled up a civil case against a criminal law, and that was Baker v. Wade. Unfortunately, among the list of people who are no longer with us is Baker. He is not here, but his memory continues. And that case worked its way successfully all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and we got written off as a footnote in the Hardwick v. Bowers case. And so got there almost, but didn't quite get off on that one. And so we started all over again with another civil case, and that was the Loudit Morales case, Morales v. Morales. Now there's one Morales with us today and another one in jail somewhere. And so you can figure out which Morales is our friend. And that case went to the Texas Supreme Court, and they said, oh no, you don't belong here, you belong across the hall. And so we got poured out on that one. We've been looking for that direct criminal appeal on a 2106 arrest for a long, long time. And it was difficult to find because there have only been 5 prosecutions in Harris County of 2106. They said, well, if they're not prosecuting, why get rid of it? Because every time you went to apply for a job, somebody thought you're a criminal when you go home and you can't have the job. And every time that you wanted to be a police officer, they said, no, this lesbian violates Texas law when she goes home at night and she can't be a police officer. So we went through that on adoptions. We went through that with custody. We went through that in probate court, and we went through that employment. So 2106 was enforced every day, but not a criminal statute. So when Lane Lewis called me and everybody else, I think, in town today and said, guess what we've got, we all jumped with joy. Now, what are the circumstances? What is the fact situation here? What can we do? And these two brave men have taken that cause, and Mitchell Kateen has guided this with the necessary legal help along the way to this day. And this day is important to me. I'm an old man. I'm 62 years old. But you know, if I get lucky this afternoon, it will be the first time in my life I have been intimate without violating a law in the state of Texas. And not only that, appealing all the way to the Supreme Court, a Class C misdemeanor punishable by fine only, not to exceed the time it was written, $200, and now $500, and now not at all. We have eliminated the criminalization of gay and lesbian intimate behavior, coast to coast, border to border. Slam that door shut. We can never, by this decision, go back. And I would now like to ask Dr. Clark Chamberlain, who is an ordained Presbyterian minister, to give some remarks from the religious community.
milestone day. It's a wonderful day. It's incredible that a generation ago, the words used to describe gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender persons were sick, criminal, and sinful. Well, the physicians gave up on sick 30 years ago. And today the Supreme Court gave up on criminal. And I represent a group of rabbis, priests, ministers, imams, sachems, and other religious folks who gave up on sinful. We affirm that every person possesses worth, dignity, and sacredness, and that all persons, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity, should enjoy the same civil rights, including the right to privacy. We believe that sexual orientation and gender identification are in fact God-given and therefore immutable and not a matter of morals.
You are listening to the best of Queer Voices.
The Supreme Court decision finding sodomy laws unconstitutional began as a civil rights violation right here in Houston. That puts Houston on the map of major civil rights advances for GLBT persons, a map that began with the Stonewall riots in New York City. From June 17, 2002, here is a segment from This Way Out about that historic event.
Once upon a time, not so long ago, it was against the law in most places to serve alcohol to homosexuals and illegal for members of the same gender to dance together. Still, with the June Pride Month tradition upon us, many people, especially the up-and-coming out younger generation, know little about the pivotal event in the contemporary queer movement that changed everything. It's an annual question of pride. What's a Stonewall, and who was Christopher Street?
Festivals celebrating gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender pride are now held in cities all over the world practically all year round. But the tradition was born in June. Unfortunately, it's not surprising to discover that many people, even those who come out to enjoy the celebrations, don't know what event they're commemorating.
Do you know what the Stonewall riots were about?
I'm not real clear, I'll be honest with you. I never have read about it, what exactly happened there, the purpose of it.
I've never heard anything about it. No, I don't know nothing about it.
So just what is this party all about? The significance of June 27th, 1969 must be seen against the backdrop of life before that. A poem by Judy Gron from the classic Lesbian Concentrate album gives you some idea.
A history of lesbianism. How they came into the world. The women-loving women came in three by three and four by four. The women-loving women came in 10 by 10. And 10 by 10 again, until there were more than you could count. How they lived in the world, the women-loving women learned as much as they were allowed, and walked and wore their clothes the way they liked, whenever they could. They did whatever they knew to be happy or free, and worked and worked and worked. The women-loving women in America were called dykes, and some liked it, and some did not. They made love to each other, the best they knew how, for the best reasons. How they went out of the world, the women-loving women went out one by one, having withstood greater and lesser trials and much hatred from other people. They went out one by one, each having tried in her own way to overthrow the rule of men over women. They tried it one by one, and hundred by hundred, until each came in her own way to the end of her life and died. The subject of lesbianism is very ordinary. It's the question of male domination that makes everybody angry.
By the late 1960s, the anger of lesbians and gays was straining the locks on the closet doors, but something still held them back. This discussion was recorded at Pacifica Radio New York just 6 months before the historic event.
This is the New Symposium, a program from and for the homosexual community. I'm Baird Searles, and also on hand,
Kermit Lamb. I have felt, and I think I've changed even my thinking on this in the last 3 or 4 years, is that homosexuals aren't proud enough to be homosexuals and get out and you know, be militant a little bit and say I am, and it's a little like I'm glad to see now in the racial thing that Negroes now aren't just trying to get along like everybody else. They've seen beauty in their own blackness.
Yeah.
Black is beautiful.
It bears on what you're saying about being proud of homosexual, which I think even at now is a little much to ask of most people, but just being open about it. Since doing this program, and kind of because of doing this program and trying to find people to do this program back at the beginning, it has come so sharply to my attention the total lack of courage that the homosexual community has. And I know the reasons, damn it, and I've been through it myself. I think that is one thing you can really pin on all of you out there is cowardice. I know I'm going to get letters saying, okay, it's easy for you. You're not going to get fired from the state. But it hasn't been that easy. The feeling that I've totally lost contact with my father because of the program. Mm. And I know that people's lives can be ruined if they open up and reveal themselves. An idealistic plane. We all know that if every homosexual said what he was tomorrow, that the whole situation would be changed for the better. Now, this is obviously a pipe dream. But for every homosexual that does open up and reveal himself, there are that many more people that realize that homosexuals are real, breathing human beings. They are not sex maniacs or freaks. That many more young people that are given the fact that a homosexual life needn't be a disaster.
I know a number of people who are under 25, say, under 20. They all seem to be much more relaxed. I hope it's a sign. I don't.
So do I.
There's a certain feeling among many younger people of not caring who knows. They have straight friends who know, and I hope this is sort of indicative of something.
June 27th, 1969, as recalled in Brett Artery's 1970 documentary.
The disorders began with a routine police raid on a homosexual bar, the Stonewall, on Christopher Street. Almost every homosexual who was in New York at the time of the Stonewall Rebellion has his own private memory of what took place. One of the longtime leaders of the gay rights movement, Craig Rodwell, remembered this way.
First night was Friday. I was on the way home from a friend's house. The raid was just starting at that time, and we noticed the crowd. We went over there, and a crowd was gathering out in front. There was a paddy wagon pulled up and a few people being taken out. It started with those few coins and pebbles being thrown at the police, and then the police retreated into the Stonewall. And then after the police barricaded themselves inside, it was like half an hour later, the riot police started moving up Christopher, breaking up the crowd. It's really become a very angry crowd with hundreds of bottles and rock. There wasn't one window left in the whole place after about 10 minutes. And they broke the crowd up. And